Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It is Dan Canovio. It is the former world champion, Chris Algieri. It is your favorite boxing podcast in the world. Chris, how are you? How was your weekend of taking care of business in sunny Florida?
Weekend was good. And, listen, there are mutterings around that we are the best boxing podcast in the world. But we got some positive feedback over the weekend. Some really, really nice words for you guys. So thanks.
Yeah. I never really ask anyone to go out and like give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating because those things help. So I actually went to it the other day and I was like, let's take a look. And we had a bunch of 5-star ratings, not surprised, and some great feedback. So really appreciate that. So go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. Subscribe to the Inside Boxing Live YouTube page. Subscribe to the TikTok and the Instagrams and the face snaps and the chat books and all that, because we need to get it going. Our TikTok just reached 2 million likes.
Wow. See, unlike you, I will tell everyone to go like, subscribe. It's a smash that like button.
Smash that button.
Yeah. Everybody says that's fucking so annoying. Smash that like button. Feedback is good. Get us in the algorithm. I mean, the algo is important.
Yeah, we're doing very well on socials, and it's always good to get the feedback out there. A lot to get to on this episode. There was some heavyweight action. FA Jogba had a nice KO win. Joe Cordina over the weekend defended his title. So Raymond Muratala go from prospect to contender. But we'll start with some rumors and PBC land. You see this, Chris, Netflix is looking to dabble into the boxing world. No more Netflix and chill. It's going to be boxing and Netflix and then maybe some chilling afterwards. They want to look at a Jake Paul fight, which is like, okay, I can see that. He's a huge name and, you know, he has a documentary on their platform. But what made it really interesting is that they're interested in PBC fights. Whether it's one-offs or whether it's their entire catalog, I have a lot of mixed feelings on this. A one-off wouldn't be terrible, but it also wouldn't be great because we want more than just one fight on there. But undoubtedly, boxing ending up on Netflix is just a tremendous thing for the sport.
Yeah, tremendous thing, and also inevitable. I mean, we've been talking about this, and I've been at the forefront of saying like this isn't a bad thing with, you know, Showtime going under, and I had a different fresh look on it. I think it's just going to be a different way for our fans to see boxing now. And listen, Netflix is going to get on board. My worry is that, which has happened with PBC many times, is that they're going to get a bad taste in their mouth, and because of business side and things like that, we've lost some networks from some of the dealings of in certain situations. So I just hope that. Listen, it's one of those things where like, oh, we're going to try something new. All right. If it should, hopefully it goes well. So it becomes a, you know, not a new thing, not a novel thing. It becomes a real thing, but man, that's not always the case. So yeah. I hope they come out swinging, like they close the year and they do a good job and keep the business rolling.
Even the optimist Dan is like a little like, when I read the Wall Street Journal report that was on here, I was like, oh, wow, this is sick. Let me actually take a look and read this. Like the Jake Paul thing, not surprising. The PBC is a one-off because Netflix is one of the only streaming platforms to not get into live sports, not get into anything live. Next month, they're doing a golf event. They're kind of testing the waters with these one-offs. And with boxing, you can do one-offs. You can do one Jake Paul fight. You can do one PBC fight. You don't have to commit to an entire season like the NFL, which Amazon does on Thursday nights, or Apple, which does MLB on Friday nights. So they're looking to dabble. That's like what kind of boxing is. It's kind of like a guinea pig for a lot of these platforms and a lot of these networks. So we'll see. There are also rumors out there that this could be something, you know, Heyman or PBC could leak this to the Wall Street Journal to kind of get Amazon Prime to sign on the dotted line. There's also rumors out there that the deal's already signed. Like PBC has their home and they're going to announce it any minute. That's the thing with Al Heyman. That's the thing with PBC, Chris, is I'm sending out feelers all weekend. You know, my dad, he's on the case. He loves doing this shit. Texting people left and right. Yeah, what, hear anything, PBC? They keep it so close to the vest, PBC, on where they're going to end up. They can have a deal right now. They could be still searching for a deal. There's a lot of other options out there. I'm just very excited to see what it's going to be next, like you said.
I can't imagine there's not a deal already done. I know the way Al operates. He's always one or two steps ahead of the game. The guy plays a 3D chess. So I would not be surprised at all if the deal was done.
This is what you got to do. You got to hit up a Connolly or one of your managers and look for a fight with a PBC guy and then kind of feel around. And then they'll give you we're going to be on Amazon Prime next year. Algeria versus.
Maybe I already know something.
What do you maybe know, I bro? Already, I see you posting stuff. Post stuff in the gym. You're kicking the shit out of trainers. You're posting new shoes. What do you know, bro? Spill it. Patreon?
Yeah, Patreon.
Save that for Pro Box.
Like and subscribe, guys. Like and subscribe. Comment below.
Go to Chris's OnlyFans. Get a picture of his feet and then where PBC O-F. Might be going. Yeah, so that's the latest. Yeah, I could see that. That's the latest with PBC. They have one more pay-per-view with Benavidez Andre. It actually has a really good undercard.
Love that fight. Love that card.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun card. Who's on it? Our guy, the Subriel Matias versus Ergashev.
Ergashev, good fight. And that's an under-the-radar dark horse type fight. Like that's a boxing fan's fight because a lot of people, like even Subriel Matias, even though he's kind of a guy that we all talk about, I don't think the regular fans really know too much about him. But Ergashev, he's definitely a guy who's under the radar. He's good. He hasn't had that breakout win yet. He hasn't really even had a breakout matchup yet. So this could be that. I mean, I think whoever wins this fight, we're all going to be talking about for a while.
Yeah, it also has Jermall Charlo on. I'm trying to pull up the PPV card. Jermall Charlo is coming against Jose Benavidez Jr. Weirdest fight because it's not at 160. It's at 163, and there's no belt on the line.
I mean, the belt should not be on the line. I mean, he should be stripped anyway. But also, yeah, weird fight. But he's been out of the ring for 2.5 years. This is his comeback fight. At least he's fighting a guy who has a name that's recognizable, even though he's been inactive as well and definitely hasn't fought this weight class before. So, I mean, listen, we got Jermall back. Hopefully the fight comes through. Hopefully this will mean he'll be on the ring more because, listen, he's a great fighter.
Yeah, he was once a great fighter. I want to see him come back. Then you got Lamont Roach. Going up against Hector Luis Garcia, who hasn't been in the ring since getting evaporated by Tank. So that's the last pay-per-view in the history of Showtime on Thanksgiving weekend. They got rid of that one in December 9th that they were kind of messing around with, the Floyd, the Keith Thurman, the Danny Garcia. They're not doing that. So that's going to be the send-off for Showtime, and then we'll see where PBC goes in the future. NBA fans, the wait is over. The season is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of the National Basketball Association, has a great offer for you right now, an unbeatable offer, if you will. New customers can score $200 in instant bonus bets by throwing down only $5. You throw down $5, you can win up to $200 instantly in bonus bets. Win or lose, it doesn't matter. You start the season with an instant dub, just like my Knicks, right? Oh, maybe not. And with DraftKings parlays, everyone's got a shot at even bigger basketball wins. String together multiple bets from the same game or build your parlay across multiple games and for a shot at making your payday even sweeter. We all love parlays. So right now, go over to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, download it if you haven't already, and use code IBL. New customers can get $200 in bonus bets instantly for betting just $5. That's code IBL on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or you can text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. Licensed partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles. 21 plus. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in ONT. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See sportsbook.com. DraftKings.com/basketball in terms of eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. How about this, Chris? Fury Ngannou does Only 67,000 pay-per-view buys in the U.S., according to Dave Meltzer. Ariel Helwani is saying, no, no, no. It did 400,000. You got to keep in mind, it was streamed on pay-per-view over on TNT Sports over in the U.K., which is formerly BT Sport. Fury's a big draw there. 67,000 seems astronomically low. But then again, this is a fight that no one asked for. This is a fight up until the Saturday of. I didn't realize if it was a 10 or 12 round, was the title on the line. MMA guy in Ngannou with no real fan push behind him. Fury, who most boxing fans can't stand. This is not a good recipe. That's a recipe for 70,000, right?
I mean, listen, 70,000 is abysmal, but we didn't expect it to sell. We heard there was mutterings that it wasn't going to sell. That's why the announcement of the Usyk Fury fight came about, kind of spur on ticket sales. That's what we thought, or pay-per-view buys, because it was so low. But man, that those are bad numbers. And really, thinking about it, it's not that surprising. Like you said, first of all, I think boxing in general, boxing fans, were pissed at Fury. The guy's not busy. His last fight was a fight nobody wanted to see. Fight Chisora for the third time. Who cares? Zora. And he's holding on to Dillian White. Yeah, like, who cares? Like, nobody wants to see those fights. And then he's holding on to that WBC belt. He's a blockade for the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world occurring. I think a lot of people were there was a lot of fan fatigue for Tyson Fury. Then you got Ngannou. He hasn't been in the ring in 2.5 years either. He's never been in a boxing ring. Every boxing pundit worth his salt was saying the fight was bullshit. So how do you expect this thing to sell?
Well, that's...
you can't retroactively sell pay-per-views because the fight actually turned out to be okay and it was competitive. So people are excited about it now. But that's not going to equate to pay-per-view.
The next I think Ngannou will
the rematch is huge.
Rematch huge. Whatever comes. Ngannou's next fight, I think will do good, whether it's on MMA or boxing. Hopefully it's in boxing. Like, I heard some rumors December 23rd in Saudi. Those seem to be flip-flopping too. But yeah, like you said, like it was a bad recipe. It was also Saturday afternoon going up against college football, which is really not the best time to do a pay-per-view. But I don't know if you caught this. Ariel and Chael Sonnen had a big time blow up. Did you catch any of that shrapnel on social media?
Why does Chael talk like
Trump?
He talks like, why is he Trump? Why is he trumping it up?
Chael Sonnen is basically always been Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's always been a character, but now
you ever have any
literally...
run-ins with him?
No, never. He's always been entertaining.
I think he's great.
I saw bits and pieces of that on socials. I wasn't following. Couldn't really tell what they were even talking about, but. That looked it was entertaining.
It was basically Ariel thinks it was a huge success, the event, because Ngannou, you know, beat the UFC. He got a $10 million payday before he even stepped in the ring, and he was going deep on that side of it, like kind of like going to the point where, you know, people were starting to think, is this really just about Ariel and his beef with the UFC? Or is it mostly just being happy for Ngannou? And I think it's a little bit of both. I think he liked to prove a lot of people wrong. And it was receipt. He was sending, playing receipts and pulling up a lot of receipts of people like us saying that, you know, Fury's going to carry him and it's not going to be a good event. But then you have the Chael's side of things. And he says, look, this fight did abysmal on pay-per-view. The Saudis lost not just like tens of millions, like several, like $50-75 million in losses. They weren't even trying to break even. They were fine with that. They're sport washing. They wanted to just show you. They wanted you to see that Saudi Arabia and big time sporting events are now synonymous. So they're fine with losing a ton of money. But I think Sonnen's point was, if you put this on the open market and it's just Ngannou versus Fury with like not Saudi behind it, it's ultimately a failure. Which I think he's wrong, because it's not a failure. And Ngannou got $10 million, and it's those crazy boxing purses. So that was a little bit of fallout, and we don't know what Ngannou is going to do there. But what do you? I think it falls somewhere in the middle. Like, obviously Ngannou beat the UFC and he got the money, and he got the $10 million, the boxer payday. But it was not an event that made money. Like, that thing lost money.
No, it was a fairy tale for Ngannou, and that's it. It was not a success. We just got the numbers. The bottom line, it was not a success. It was a success for Ngannou. Thank God. I mean, the guy deserves it. He bet on himself. It's a great story. He's going to be the next Rocky movie in a couple of years. But for in terms of what's going on, it's not a success. No, not at all. The fight.
Well, I want to see what it means for Ngannou going forward, though. I want to see like if he fights
Wilder.
He'll make
some more big paydays.
Right. If he fights Wilder, I think it'll do big. If he fights any of the Joshua, it'll obviously do big because those are marquee names. If he fights a Chisora, like we've talked about, or like a middling guy, Joseph Parker. Like, what type of numbers do those do? Or will Saudi kind of underwrite it once again? Like, I'm curious what Ngannou's real value is on the open market, even though I don't think it really matters sometimes with boxing because these exorbitant purses, you know, which why we're in this predicament that we're in right now with Showtime being out of the sport and, you know, a lot of promoters calling for a great reset. Like, what is Ngannou's, like, real value as a heavyweight boxer right now? Is he an attraction? Is he a B-side? Is he a ticket seller? Like, I'm very curious without Saudi involved. So I don't know if we'll ever know.
He's a B-side. Simple as that. He's 37 years old. So he's a B-side. He's there to make money for a couple fights in a couple years. It's going to be really difficult to have him as the A-side against any of the top guys. And, you know, he overperformed in the Tyson Fury fight. But also Tyson vastly underperformed. So it's not a realistic test yet. So we got to see what happens next. And that's why it's dangerous for him to fight. And they're throwing around names like Zile Zhang and Joseph Parker. I say Zhang, no way. Stay away from that guy. Unless you're going to China and making like buku bucks, stay away from Zhang.
Don't do that.
No, bad fight. And even Joseph Parker. Joe's still too good. He's solid enough. As a tough guy, he's good. He's got a great chin. He's a solid guy. He's durable. He's big. He's athletic. He's got a lot of experience. He's good at slowing down the pace and fighting that way. Even him is like, I think he goes right for the tip top. Go for the Wilders. Go for the Joshuas. I like the Joshua fight best.
You do? What changed your mind?
I like that fight. I like that fight now.
I feel like last week I was like, Joshua does nothing for me because he's not the big puncher. Like Wilder, it's got to be two big punchers.
Wilder is it's interesting in that sense, but I don't think he has any chance against Wilder.
You think Ngannou has a better chance to beat Joshua than Wilder?
I think we'll definitely get more rounds. Definitely get rounds. Wilder, it could be a round. It could be two rounds. Like Wilder's punch is just a different thing. And listen, we saw in the Fury fight, he wasn't really reacting to shots. Fury was just really off, and a lot of those shots were, you know, just missing, just whatever. Yeah. He doesn't have that like that slick rolling with shots. You know, he got hit with some big shots from Tyson. You can't get hit with shots like that from Wilder. And yeah. Granted, he had a great chin. He showed it in the Tyson Fury fight. But man, I like the Joshua fight. They got the Nigerian thing.
If they do it, it will be a big scene. And I don't think it will be sometime next year, and they'll build it up. I know Eddie Hearn's starting to, you know, look for that. And, you know,
but then also on the back end of that, Anthony Joshua gets the win. He goes out, he gets on the mic immediately after the fight. He goes, I beat the guy who beat you, Tyson Fury. I think he beat you. I think he beat you. I beat him. Let's go. That makes that fight so much bigger. That's got to be the way that Eddie's thinking. And it's a smart way to think. I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, that is a track for Joshua to kind of reinvigorate this last chapter of his career because he desperately needs it. I mean, these fights against Jermaine Franklin or Robert Hellenius aren't doing much for him in terms of, you know, getting his name out there and getting people to buy
his
in.
His last chapter is Fury. That's the end of the book.
Or Wilder. I mean, that fight feels like it came and went, and that was supposed to be end of December. That was supposed to be the big Saudi fight that Saudi wants to do one more fight, December 23rd, and that was supposed to be Joshua and Wilder. And got me thinking about the top four. Like, we talk about the top four in the heavyweight division ad nauseum, right? Wilder, Fury, Joshua, Usyk. We talk about how inactive they are. We talk about, you know, come on, let's go. You're kind of an embarrassment to boxing. What about the other like 10 or 12 heavyweights that in boxing right now that we saw this past weekend? We saw Efe Ajagba, 3 straight wins, showing some improvement. Some of the other names, Chris, like Azeal Hai Zhang, who I would put probably in the top four, but for the sake of this conversation, I'll put him at 5. Azeal Hai Zhang, he got 2 wins over Joseph Parker. What's he going to do next? I don't know. He can sit around and wait for a title shot.
Joe Joyce. You said Joseph Parker over Joe Joyce.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Joe Joyce. 2 wins over Joe Joyce, and now he's in a position to get like a title shot, but that might not come. He might have to wait another year, Zhang. I would hate to see that for Zhang.
Yeah, Zhang is my front runner right now for the guys who are breaking into those top guys. And top guys haven't been fighting anyway. We got to get, but also, and we've mentioned this on the show before, gotta tip our hat to Anthony Joshua because he's actually staying busy. He actually gets in the ring and fights, which I appreciate. But the other guys, Fury, we finally saw him after a year off, and he fought an MMA guy, and he did not look great. And then, you know, Usyk, by no fault of his own, can't really stay that busy. And I think Zhang is knocking right at that door, and I want to see him in with any of the top guys, even the guys who have been super inactive, the Wilders. I think he deserves a Joshua fight. Andy Ruiz who's undeserving of the position, is still a good fighter and is still like one of those top guys who's just outside the top four or five.
Yeah, I might have been. I don't know what to even where to put that guy. I don't know how to properly rate him. It's so tough because
he hasn't fought in so long. Yeah, he's so dangerous, and he could beat any one of those guys. But I wouldn't necessarily favor him, you know, against any of the top guys again. But he can win and he can beat those guys. And when he's doing his thing, he's a force. But we don't know what's left of him. We don't know what he's got left in the tank.
Yeah, I think the top four guys now, with Ngannou now in the picture and kind of moving it along, I think in a perfect world we'll get some movement next year. They'll all start fighting each other. That means everyone inches up and everyone, the picture starts to come into the fold a little bit more. There's Zhang. There's Hrgović, who stopped Dempsey McKean in August. And then he didn't fight again until his previous fight was August against 2022 against Zhang, which was controversial. But he picked up the win. And he is now the WBO mandatory, or has been the WBO mandatory for Usyk. Then there's guys like Frank Sanchez, four wins since the Ajagba win in 2021, but nothing, you know, no crazy wins. And he's pretty good. I would say he's a top 10 guy. Jared Anderson, on the rise, ready for the next level. Did get arrested.
I'm sure you heard the news about him, right? Yeah.
Did get arrested this week with firearms and driving under the influence. Get a slap on the wrist. He is on the rise and he's ready for the next level. FA Ajagba, like I just talked about, he fought this past weekend. Looks like he's getting better every single time. Otto Wallin, huge win over Gassiev. This guy needs a shot. I mean, this guy fought Fury tough and then disappeared because doesn't have a big promoter, doesn't have a network behind him, doesn't have a big push. But the guy's damn good. And that Gassiev,
dude, I called that fight. Any other promotion, Wallin wins that fight. Because that cut was so brutal, and it was 100% a punch, that would have got stopped anywhere else.
Yeah,
anywhere
they wanted to protect the Wilder.
Anywhere
the
else,
Wilder
that fight.
The second Wilder
that,
fight.
Anywhere else, that fight gets stopped. That cut was brutal. They ruined one of my dress shirts that night. I got gypsy blood on me. I should sell it on the internet.
Gypsy blood. The thing with Wallin is like he's almost like penalized for suffering from that win. You thought it would do wonders for his career. Kind of did the opposite. And then there's Richard Torres, who has big potential but seems like pretty far off. He's fighting no hopers.
Does he have big potential?
I don't think so.
What
do you
say? He's small. I called his pro debut.
He'd be a great Bridgerweight.
I mean, he's wild. I don't see that style that he enacts, which was good in the amateurs and you know, transitioned to the pros. Now he's knocking everybody out, but I don't see that working at a top level, especially for being undersized.
Yeah. We'll see. I know Top Rank wants to push him, and they talk about marketable. He's pretty marketable.
Yeah, he's fun. He does the work outside the ring for sure.
Yeah, you see his TikToks and Instagrams. Like every time I open up the boxing TikTok ours, he's posting something that's pretty funny. And then there's like Jalilov, who was world class talent, zero marketability. Yeah. No one really knows who he is. He's like 6'8", 6'7", tall, lanky,
and bounces like Bivol. He's like in and out and just drops left hands. Like he's a dangerous guy.
That guy can rule the division. I just don't know, like he needs like some media training or some like Top Rank is not behind him and like really get him out there, like start putting him on some of these cards and on the bigger cards.
He's a heavyweight Bivol. Like there's not a lot to sell. Yeah, it's a very very good thing.
Bivol is not going to fight once this year. That's insane. This guy beat Canelo, and he got talk about being penalized like Wallin. This guy beat Canelo and has been blacklisted from boxing. That's a different topic. And then, Fabio Wardley picked up a win, but he's not top 15. He's probably the best of the UK heavyweights. But all these names, like they can all fight each other. Like I would like to see like FA Ajagba fight Jared Anderson, or Jared Anderson fight Zilhai Zhang, or Frank Sanchez fight Ajagba, or Frank Sanchez fight Anderson. Like mix and match. Like there are fights to be made in the heavyweight division. And I actually think next year we could start seeing some of these guys fighting each other, creating fun heavyweight fights that doesn't have to just be the top four that we just named before.
The problem is that these guys who are just outside the top four are looking for the big money fights, and they don't want to take risks fighting each other because a loss means a lot in boxing. And undefeated heavyweight's worth a lot of money. So it's not just the fighters, it's the managers, the promoters. They're trying to get that undefeated heavyweight to get that money shot. So all of them are afraid to fight each other. And I don't mean that the fighters are afraid to fight each other. I mean, in terms of the coming together as teams and taking these fights, because you're putting in a lot of risk because there's a lot of money. Heavyweight money's different. Heavyweight might as well be a different sport. The way it's fought is different. Different money, different negotiation. Everything's different in heavyweight. It really is like a different sport. So yeah, it's hurting these guys who are outside that core group of guys. But the problem is the core group of guys aren't fighting either. So heavyweight has been a barren wasteland for the last 18 months.
Well, at least Zhang, you look at someone like Zhang, he's got some losses on his record. He didn't wait around and fight the bigger names. He fought a guy like Joe Joyce, and he picked up two wins, and now he's in demand. So maybe they can look to him and be like, hey, maybe I'll take that approach. Same thing with Ajagba. Had the loss to Frank Sanchez in 2021 and has bounced back with three straight wins. He signed with Top Rank. I think after that knockout on Saturday night, I think there's somewhat of a demand for him. I think some fans are like, oh, I wouldn't mind watching him fight Jared Anderson. Jared Anderson, I think, is the opposite. I think he's on the rise, and I think Top Rank is looking to bring him to the next level. Would you agree with that, with Anderson, that I think he's ready for the Ajagba Sanchez Valin level?
Yeah, you know, I'm big on Jared Anderson. I'm very high on him as a future heavyweight star, and a heavyweight champion. But I agree. As long as he can not run into the stuff that we just heard about in terms of the out of the ring stuff. I mean, the kid's potential's through the roof, and he is ready to fight any one of those guys. And I think they were smart what they did over the summer, which I wasn't really sure about. He had that tough fight with Martin.
Yeah.
And then came right back like 25 days later and fought a guy who really stood no chance and was just another win under his belt. But I thought that was smart, actually. In hindsight, looking back, I was like, yeah, you know what? Because everyone was talking kind of negatively about the Martin fight, which I didn't understand why. I thought it was a good test, and he passed it with flying colors. And he came right back against another world-ish guy. And, you know, he beats him pillar to post, barely gets, you know, hit, and then moves on. Now this last fight was a better fight. So yeah, I think it was actually worked out to be a good thing, but no, he needs to be back in the ring sooner than later, because obviously being out of the ring is not a good thing for him.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean to say it was just a slap on the wrist. I mean, that's pretty some serious news that came out about him, but he's young and he's got money, and he does have a lot of potential though. Even Tyson Fury last week in Saudi Arabia is like, this is the heir to the throne. Top Ranks, this is their main guy that they want to push as a heavyweight. So there are some names at heavyweight. I know we talk about how it's a barren wasteland. Yes, it is. The top four are bringing down the entire group as a whole. But Ngannou, I think, pushed some life into this heavyweight division at the top. And then we should see some of these names fall into place, because there are some fun fights. There are some fun names in there. And we can get back to heavyweights fighting each other, because you see this week, a couple of anniversaries. George Foreman beating Michael Moore. And the Fan Man was also, as we record this today, on this date. So like, I've been seeing a lot of heavyweight action on the timeline, and it got me like, damn, I wish like the heavyweights were all fighting each other, even the top ones, and also like these middle guys too, because fun shit happens when heavyweights get in the ring.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the reason why we all still tuned in for Ngannou and Fury, because it's like, we got these giant humans throwing hammers at each other. This is fun. But yeah, I mean, when you brought up those anniversaries, that Foreman Moore fight, I love talking about that fight so much. Like, I really like, I've analyzed it. I've really watched it. Such an amazing thing, like historically, for that to happen. And George Foreman had such an incredible dual career. It's absolutely amazing. It's movie stuff.
Well, here's a movie. Did you watch his movie?
I heard it was so bad that I chose not to.
They technically did make a movie about his life. It just wasn't worth watching.
Yeah, I'm gonna pretend that didn't happen, because I don't want to tarnish how cool George's life actually is. And then the Fan Man, that's crazy.
Yeah,
we were talking about some of the most shocking moments in boxing over on Pro Box TV. And you know, we talked about the bite, obviously Mike Tyson and Evander, but then the Fan Man's another one. How many shocking moments could Evander be in? Like, what a career!
Not only that, like they, I did a little piece on like a 1 minute short that's out right now on Twitter and our socials. He, you know, there was like a 45 minute wait, because it was outside, they wrapped up Riddick Bowe in like 45 blankets. Bowe's wife fainted from all the commotion. They beat the hell out of the fan man guy. And then Holyfield just kind of went
good.
Yeah, Brock Newman and all the Bowe's toughs, those guys from Bed-Stuy, just beat the hell out of him. It's a crazy story with the family. He ended up committing suicide like 20 years later. I really went deep on this topic. My dad was there and he said it was pure chaos, and they didn't know if they were gonna continue on with the fight. But the scariest thing, I remember, like, we ordered the pay-per-view, me and my brother. And we were watching it, and I was maybe 7 or 8 years old. And then I remember that one shot of the fan man coming down, and you just see like, his silhouette and over the ring. And it was so scary as a kid, as like an 8 year old, because knowing that your dad's there, I'm like, who is this guy with a fan? Like, and it just was very bizarre. That's gotta be one of the more bizarre moments ever in the history of boxing.
Vander's response was crazy. Like, he looked, because he's a you know, high level athlete. He was like, he reacted like it was like a punch coming out of me. He had good reactions. Ready to go. But yeah, man, honestly. All right. So what's your take on this? Let me ask you, should they have continued, or should have that been a no contest?
No, they should have. I mean, that's the heavyweight title. I mean, there was that's probably the biggest fight of the year. I think they made the right decision. I think it was like, was it Mark Ratner? It was the Nevada.
Mark was always good at those things, making those decisions. I disagree. I would argue it.
Why?
45 minutes, bro. 45 minutes.
That's longer than an actual fight.
You're a primed athlete ready for a single night. You've spent 16, 18, 20 weeks preparing for this moment, and you're priming yourself. You literally, I mean, granted, both guys, but still, I don't know. I would have fought that.
You think that Bo should have fought it?
I mean, whoever. I mean, either one of them could have. You know,
seemed like they wanted to continue on. At least the fighters did.
No, because they're old school badasses, and then they want to finish, you know, cracking each other in skulls. So
I would love to have seen that played out now with Twitter, and like how that would have played out, and all the controversy and.
Oh, the controversy would never end.
Speaking about controversy, did you see this BoxRec has put out a 168-pound best ever list?
Rubbish.
It's pure rubbish. And we got to keep in mind that BoxRec, they don't have humans actually voting on this. They have an algorithm. Like, they have Ngannou as the 590th rated heavyweight right now. So BoxRec puts out these all-time lists, and they put out a list at 168 pounds. And it was very controversial. Got people all worked up. They had Canelo number one. They had Calzaghe two. They had Andre Ward at three. Frotch, Mikel Kessler, Demetrius Andrade, Steve Collins, Arthur Abraham, Sven Otaki, and Daniel Jacobs at 10. No Roy Jones. What?
What? What? What a strange group of guys. But again, like, so for people at home, BoxRec. Don't trust BoxRec, for one. One, like you said, it's an algorithm, so it puts it together.
Well, it's a great tool to look up.
Yeah, not quick, and all but that. Like, but also like, apparently some records are not real, and some fights are left off of.
Oh, did you see that odd story?
There's been mutterings about that for a long time, and with not just, you know, what we're talking about, it's been a lot of guys
But I would say for the most part, BoxRec is a useful tool. But go on.
Yeah. But this is absolute rubbish. And I never even say rubbish. That's for our UK fans.
Well, there's a lot of UK fighters.
This is basura. This is basura.
It's trash. It's ass. Trash. It's a two-pack. And for one US, it's a two-pack of ass, this list. Canelo number one is just nuts to me, because I feel like, yeah, he cleared out a whole division and he's been great at 168. But I mean, what's his signature win at 168?
Plant
or Smith?
Yeah.
I think he's gonna end his career 168. So he's a lot more to do there. Another thing too, 168 is a pretty newer weight class. That's not an original eight. What was it? We would just say like the mid-80s or late-80s. 168 came in, yeah. So it doesn't have like the jump start like 160 does or 147, like hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah, but Roy, nobody beats Roy. At 68, like no one on the list beats Roy. So like Roy, I don't understand how Roy's not in the top 10. Not to mention that none of those guys can beat him.
That's what's weird about the algorithm. It's like, if you have an algorithm, like Roy Jones should pop up on there. Like, you would think leaving Roy Jones off is like a human move to create engagement to get us to talk about it. That's like the old trick. If you make a list, and so if you're working media and you make a list, leave someone out or put Roy Jones like 9 or 10, people retweet it. They say, well, how this is horrible. And then you get people talking about it. Mm-hmm. But for a computer, it would take emotions out of it to not have Roy Jones as the in the top three, let alone not on the list at all. Is like an oversight? Like, what's going on?
You got Michael Kessler and you don't have Roy Jones.
Danny Jacobs, who has one fight at 168 against Rosado.
Which... oh boy.
I got Roy's box rec here. You got to go back a while for him for his fights at 168.
Yeah, 68.
I'm searching. I'm 1999 he started fighting at 175. I mean, you got to go back. 96. That's the thing with Roy, it's like his problem was he never had that like clear rival. Like his opponents and his competition, he was just so far and superior, better. But you know, he's got to win over James Toney at 168.
Well, where's James Toney on the list?
James Toney's not on the list.
I know that's another question. It's like
James Toney's fighting this weekend on Triller against Razor Ruddock.
Oh boy,
that's this one here. That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Triller Fight Club in Jamaica. You could buy it for $30.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but some of these other names on the list at 168. I think Jones has to be one. Calzaghe's two.
Yeah.
Pretty much a career 168 pounder. The guy retired undefeated. He had like a 14-year run at 168. He beat a lot of big names, retired undefeated, 46-0. Calzaghe, two. Ward, you can make a case for Ward over. Ward's got to be top three. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Ward. Yeah, I got. Yeah, I would say Ward. Ward would. Calzaghe Ward is like. But yeah, that I would have Roy, Joe, Andre, yeah.
And you got a guy like Carl Froch.
Bad dude, man. Real bad dude. I got all those guys above Canelo, by the way.
Yes, which is fine because Canelo, I mean, did a lot of his work at 160, did a lot of his work at 154, is still writing his chapter here at 168. He just hasn't, if he beats, you know, he beats Andre Benavidez, some other guys coming up at 160, then he can put his name in there. But, you know, with Canelo, it's more about the totality of his career rather than just at 168. And 168 is not really a division that people stay at. It's a, like,
but James a Toney, ground. James Toney, I don't understand. He beat Aaron Barclay at 68, two fights after he beat Tommy Hearns. Like,
yeah,
that's like, how do you not put him on the list?
Well, how many fights did he have at 168? Because I know that he ballooned like pretty quick. Like, he was just, obviously finished his career heavyweight, but
talking about Toney,
I'm looking at his box. See, this little box is good.
Well, he would bounce up and down. So like, he fought Mike McCallum at 60. Those are good wins.
The body snatcher.
But then he jumped up. He fought. So 1992, he fought at 68. One, yeah. Two, three, four. You know, five, six. Yeah.
He's got like five or six fights.
He would go up and down. But yeah, no, he did it for a number of years. He fought Roy Jones at 68. Roy Jones at 68.
Right, and Jones beat him. That's why that's probably Jones' best win at 68.
Correct. Correct. But that was like a mega fight. That was a big deal.
That was a very big deal. That's why having Jones on here is like Jones has probably the best win at 68 of any of these guys. He's not even on the list. Not only that, he's freaking Roy Jones. Carl Froch has wins over Groves, Kessler, Butte, Arthur Abraham, Darrell, Pascal Taylor. That's a crazy resume.
That Jermaine Taylor win was crazy.
And also, but Ward beat Froch. That's why Ward is a level above Froch in that Super 6.
And
Ward,
he beat him with a broken hand.
Right, and Ward cleared out the whole division, and he that Super 6 couldn't have come at a better time for Ward. He was like in his prime, and he's taken out one European guy after the next. Then you have like Mikel Kessler. I put him in there. The bottom of the list is just like a bunch of just names. Like, they're just trying to fill out the list. Like,
Steve Collins. That guy was good. Let's put him in there.
Yeah, Demetrius Andrade. Like, what? Arthur Abraham. I would have him above Andrade. And he just has on the just the sheer level of fight.
Andrade has fought one time in 68. One time, and he fought like
all
a journeyman.
Great, bro.
Wow, top 10. All time.
Top 10 got us talking here on the show. So 168 is an interesting weight class. It's not really an historically deep weight class, but it has some bigger name, like Roy Jones came through that.
I would like to know how the algorithm works. Anyone who knows anything about this kind of stuff, if you guys
I do. I know Gray, BoxRec Gray. He's a guy on Twitter. I met him a bunch of times. He's pretty funny. He works for BoxRec. He knows that the algorithm is funky. He has to deal with everyone. Like when they see this list, they tweet at him. They think he is BoxRec. He's just like a guy that works for them. So he's got it's like me with CompuBox. Like I get a bunch of tweets.
Let's just blame Gray.
Yeah, Gray, what the frig, man? Why are you putting this shoddy list together?
I mean, anytime anyone shits on CompuBox around me, I'm always like, fucking Dan, god damn it.
Yeah,
I just blame you. I go right to name only. Like, oop, yep, Stan.
It's Kenobi, the younger Kenobi, not the older.
It's not your dad. Dad's awesome. Bob's the man. You, it's definitely your fault.
All right. What else we got? Did you watch any of the fights over the weekend? Joe Cordina. What did you make of that fight? It was a tough one.
He had a rough go of it.
He comes out victorious, and you take a look at the 130-pound picture. Not the biggest names, but it's like a fun top four. It's Cordina, Oshaki Foster. You got Navarrete. You got Hector Luis Garcia. So it's not the biggest names. Like
That weight class.
Right.
I love it. I'm actually a big fan of Hector Luis Garcia. I think he's very, very good. I hope he gets back on track.
Fighting Lamont Roach.
They're all fighting
around like this same time too.
How do you not love Navarrete? I mean, he is a fun guy to watch. Throws a ton of punches, has real power. Is not worried about mixing it up.
Would you say Navarrete is the class of that though?
I would. Oshaki Foster's really good. I was very impressed with him his last two wins. We spoke about him last show.
He could beat anyone on any night.
Yes. Yeah. He is that level of talent for sure.
And then Cordina, you know, is a big draw overseas. He already has come out and said, like, Oshaki Foster fight doesn't do much for me, you know, at the bank. Eddie Hearn's not really too keen on making it. I think they're waiting for Lee Wood to go up to 130. If Lee Wood joins 130, Wood Cordina, you know, that in a stadium in the UK.
Yeah, big sell. But
I don't know what that does for 130. 130 is like, it's not every weight class has to have like a freaking massive star in it. You know, it doesn't have to be this like 135 right now or 140 or even 147. Just like you give us some competitive fights and they all should be able to be made. So I don't know who comes. Like, I think even a guy like Navarrete, who's fighting Conceição on the Shakur Stevenson card, that he's been flirting with going up to 135 for years. Like Stevenson, looks like Stevenson's going to be fighting Navarrete. So it's another weight class where no one really stays at. They're either either a featherweight moving up, or you're at 130 and you want to go to lightweight, which is predominantly a more money-making division.
Yeah, it's true. At 30, like Arturo Gatti got his first world title at 30 and then was going up to 35 and had really bad luck there. Could barely get a win against a top guy at 135 and didn't stay there very long either. And then ended up at 40, obviously, and even 47. But yeah, 130 is one of those weight classes. You know, you got featherweight 26, you got 30, guys don't really stay there too long, and then you got lightweight. So it makes sense. You have more money 5 pounds north. And those lighter weight classes, I think it's easier to go up. You know, there's less pounds in between.
Yeah, it's 4 and 5.
The power isn't the same. It's not like 40 and 47. You got guys who hit, you know, much bigger punches, or 47 to 54, where the glove size changes. 8 ounces for 47 for welterweight, 10 ounce gloves for 54. So in those weight classes, as we go up, it matters a lot more. That's why you see so many guys who are multiple division champs when they start at lighter weights. Yeah. You don't see that as you get higher.
All right. It's really the news this week. Next week's is gonna be awesome because Stevenson's fighting on Thursday against De Los Santos. So we'll have a preview episode early in the week, and then we'll try to have a recap episode after Stevenson.
I don't hate that fight, man.
I don't hate it either.
I think De Los Santos is really good. I don't know if he can deal with the puzzle that is Shakur, but I'm very interested in seeing it, and being on a Thursday is very cool.
That's another thing too. I see a lot of people, like, obviously there's a lot of Shakur haters out there. There's people kind of degrading him because he's fighting on a Thursday, which I don't care. What does it matter? Like, if you're a fight fan,
you know, that's at T-Mobile.
That's nuts.
I was talking to Tim Bradley about that. I'm like, yo, Tim, where's that show? Cause he's working it. And he's like, it's T-Mobile. I'm like, really?
I love to see the attendance for that. Cause Thursday night, I know it's around like the Formula One that's going on. The F1's going off in Vegas this weekend.
That's so awesome.
So they're kind of like,
I should have went out for that. Damn.
Did you want to be, really want to be out there for? I remember the Uber driver out there who gave us. She was like cursing the sky.
Oh, that's
about
right.
It.
I just really like Formula One. I did it in Montreal twice, Austin. So yeah, but yeah, no, the infrastructure
like a Formula
in Vegas
One guy.
Is different.
You seem like a
Formula One.
Guy.
Love
I can
it.
See
it's
you
awesome.
Wearing like a, you know, like a tux and something. You
my
know,
Ferrari,
stepping up.
Ferrari, my Ferrari.
Your Diodora track
warm
suit.
Up. My Diodora track suit. I'm matching pants with the.
F1 is like super cool. Like NASCAR is like your Budweiser chugging American thing. F1
also
is like,
super cool. I'm not knocking my NASCAR fans, but NASCAR is awesome too.
I went to a NASCAR event in Chicago for John Boy and it was awesome. But it's just two different like worlds. Like NASCAR is beer chugging, red blooded Americans. F1, it's caviar, it's champagne, and sleek Europeans.
You
and
know,
they're taking
I,
over
I,
Vegas.
I can, you know, I can roll with both. You know
you
me,
both.
Bro.
Let's think about
I
you.
I can tall boy can out of the back pocket, or I can sip champagne with the best of them.
The duality of man, Chris Algieri. Yeah. So that's next week with Shakur at T-Mobile on a Thursday. I don't think they're like, I don't think they care about the attendance. It's to get eyeballs, and I think it's gonna be that's a good doubleheader on regular ESPN. Everyone's always crying about pay-per-views and DAZN. Yeah, Thursday night. Yeah, it's going up against football, but whatever. Boxing fans are gonna watch it. Shakur De Los Santos and then Navarrete Conceição. That's a fun doubleheader.
I was surprised about the Navarrete Conceição fight. Like that's a legit fight. Like Conceição's very talented. And yeah, he's, what is he, 1-2, and he had a no contest in his last fight, in his last, you know, couple fights. But listen, a lot of people thought he beat Oscar Valdez, so that's hard to even look at that as a loss. And he lost this to Shakur. I mean, he wasn't completely outclassed. He was in there. You know, he did better than a lot of other guys. But yeah, I mean, Conceição's a top guy. This is a real fight.
What's the thing with Top Rank is they kind of like, oh, it's kind of the thing with a lot of promotions. They kind of recycle a lot of these guys. Like Conceição, like you said, 1-2 and coming up short, getting another shot when there's other guys that probably are more deserving. That just kind of happens with all these promotions when you are beholden to a network and you have to put dates out there. So
and contractual gets obligations show. To fighters to get them, keep them active.
Yes, so that's when you get yourselves Conceição again in a title fight, a co-main event. That's next week. I hope everyone has a great week. I'm headed to the John Boy Media Warehouse for Blitzball Battle 4. Do you have any advice for me? I'm not really worried about the games. I'm worried about keeping my body together for 4 consecutive days.
Well, I mean, are you taking the stuff I sent you?
No comment.
Mm-hmm. All right. You know the dosage. I got the little note in there.
Up it.
When? I mean, I would for this week. I mean, you got 4 days.
4 games in a row.
Yeah, incrementally increase your dosage each night.
All right, good. I'm playing with like a young buck, a 22-year-old kid from Major League Wiffle Ball. So I'm depending on him to kind of carry the torch and let me kind of.
Also, take a right before you go out there. Take a bag of ice. And put it directly on your balls. Keep it there.
Did you tell me to do this once?
Minute. Yeah, it's up your testosterone for a short
period
of time.
I'm actually gonna do. I'm not gonna do the PED
right before you go out.
I'm not gonna do the PED. I'm gonna do the ball thing. I'm gonna have someone like videotape it, and then we'll have beautiful content. All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show this week. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you have ice for my balls.